You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where 4chan is our capture the flag champion. If you enjoy your trip here in the midside today, please tell a friend, or alternately, you can tip us by either leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes or hitting up patreon.com/themidside, where we will have another Patreon exclusive episode coming soon, probably in the next 2 weeks is what I'm aiming for. Just going to get some outline going. Before we get started this week, I want to tell a little bit of a story here. A few weeks ago, we talked about traffic in one of the Reddit questions, and it was clear that that was going to become a recurring theme in the way people in California are when dealing with cars. And I have a story about that that happened this past week. So I was leaving the parking garage for the gym, and I leave the same way every time. So this is 5 days a week for almost 2 years at this point. And when I leave at the end of the exit road, there is a stoplight with a crosswalk, and sometimes people come from Disneyland and go across that crosswalk. So clearly, I do not want to hit anyone in this crosswalk. This is something that I am aware of. Well, I get to the end of the road, and I stop. And when I stop, there is a fat woman standing there staring at me, and she starts yelling at me. And I'm ignoring her, but she keeps yelling at me till I get to the point that as she continues to yell, and maybe this is because I was just leaving the gym, so I had my adrenaline and testosterone going. I don't really know. Or maybe just because she's fucking fat. But she's still yelling at me as she's walking across the street. So finally, I roll down my window. And I yell at her, "I'm behind the fucking line. What is your problem?" And she goes, "You were coming up real fast. It didn't look like you were going to stop." "Excuse me? I didn't stop quickly enough for you? Did I hit you?" "No, all of your fat is still intact. And if I had hit you, I probably would have bounced off of you." And she continues to yell at me. So this is how mad I get. Even though I'm in the left-hand lane, I just hook a right-hand turn. So I bypass the right-hand turn lane. I just go and I get on the side of the road. And I start yelling at her as she's on the sidewalk. I'm like, "What the fuck is your problem? I did nothing fucking wrong. I know how to fucking drive." And she just starts going off at me like, "It doesn't look like you know how to drive. You're clearly an idiot. You have no idea how to drive." And I have just doubled down at this point. I'm just like, I'm going off at this point. And I just say the first thing that comes to my mind to insult her.
Oh, no.
And I say, "Have you ever been to the gym in your fucking life?" To which she replies to me, she goes, "I have a thyroid problem." So now I'm double down.
No,
I'm,
she didn't.
I'm triple.
No, she didn't. That's a sitcom reply.
She 100%. Oh, it gets even more sitcom-y. Are you ready for this?
Oh, God.
So I'm tripling down at this point. I am tripling down at this point.
Triple double. Much like what she orders at KFC.
So I reply to her. I go, "Yeah, that's what you all fucking say. You've always got fucking excuses." And she starts yelling back at me. And this is going to continue on and on until I looked down at my phone and I realized that I had dialed the girl I had a date with on Saturday night before as I was driving up, and I had forgotten that I had called her, and she had heard me yelling at this lady the whole time.
Oh, boy.
This is what traffic does to me. This is what stupid people in California do to me. Fortunately, the girl on the phone just in turn made fun of the woman for saying the stupid thyroid problem thing. So it worked out, but very sitcom, epic level proportions. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. How are you doing, Daniel?
Oh, boy. Can we just hang up the show? That's all, folks. Beep, 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 beep.
Can you believe she literally said, I have a thyroid problem?
She must be a scriptwriter. That can be the only excuse for actually saying that to another human being. I have a thyroid problem.
No, I think this is so common nowadays that this is what people use. I mean, the girl I was talking to said to me, she goes, well, that's what they all do. They develop thyroid problems because they don't take care of themselves for so long. So I think this is a legitimate thing. That I'm not saying it's legitimate that's what's wrong with her. I'm saying that that's a thing people say. It's a legitimate trend.
People do have thyroid issues. I understand that. You can add on a little bit of weight or even sometimes quite a bit of weight with a thyroid issue. But for the most part, it can still be taken off through diet and exercise.
And medicine? Medicine?
Yes. Also that.
Fucking Jesus fucking Christ. Also joining us from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Last night, we'll probably get into this, but last night two nights ago over down in Hollywood, I saw this sketch comedy show put on by my friend Neve Brooke, and it was a sketch comedy called The Line, where people had to go up and put on sketches, and there was a panel of judges who decided whether it crossed the line and is too offensive or not. And one of the judges was none other than Maddox of internet fame. And then one of the contestants who was, you know, attempting to, you know, either cross or not cross the line with their sketch was Rucka Rucka Ali of YouTube fame also. So it was, you know, a few internet stars, and it was really cool to see them in person. And it crossed the line for me, thus I was entertained. So that was a really fun night.
I have so many questions about this. Is the purpose to encourage people to cross the line so it's tongue in cheek?
You know, that is actually part of what I was a little bit disappointed with here, is because it didn't have a clear purpose. I wanted everyone to cross the line.
Right.
There was even one guy who showed up in blackface, and I was just, I found it so fucking funny until I realized it was a black guy in blackface. And that actually took away.
Better.
Is it better?
Yes.
I mean, it was just kind of it's like, not that I support blackface, but I support the idea of a white guy going in blackface and saying, you know what, this is offensive, and I'm doing it to make a statement that, like, we should still be able to do things that are offensive, even though, yes, you have a very good reason for being offended by this. But it was still really funny, all the shit the black guy said while he was in blackface. He did a great little bit. Unfortunately, the judges didn't nut up and tell him he crossed the line. So we were encouraged to raise our hand and judge it ourselves. So I actually raised my hand and I said, well, I feel like all the judges feel like they'd be crossing the line if they told a black guy that he was crossing the line. And so everyone was confused by that statement. But, that was part of the, that was one of my criticisms of the show, is it didn't have a clear purpose on whether one should cross the line or not. It was simply just a discussion about the topic, basically. And there were actual liberals in the panel of judges who were actually saying, like, oh, well, you were attacking the people in power and white people, so it wasn't crossing the line. I'm like, oh my fucking God, this undermines the entire point of the show. I'm glad they tried, though.
James, what does it feel like to be in the presence of all that internet money?
I've met Tully before, Rucka Rucka Ali, and he told me that he made his money off of, when I first met him, I had no idea who he was, and he told me he made his money off of, like, internet videos, and he didn't make a big deal about it, because he's quite a, have you ever met Tully?
I went out to dinner with him and a few other people, yes.
Okay, yeah, he's very modest, and he just like, oh yeah, I don't really, he's just like, oh yeah, I make it off of internet money. And I thought he was lying, because he was being so modest about it. I'm like, what the fuck, like, I've never heard of this guy, and it turns out he's fucking huge. So, you know, it's, yeah, it was a trip to find out that I was, you know, in the presence of all that internet money originally.
I mean, there's so many niche audiences now on the internet that you never know who you're in the presence of, because you don't have to be, you know, it was back in the day, you had to reach a certain level of fame across the entire culture, across the entire country to have a certain amount of money and success. But now with the internet, there's the increasingly diverse communities, the increasingly diverse niche communities that people like this guy find.
Yeah, that is pretty, and that is notable, but I thought Maddox was pretty cool. I bought his book when I was in high school, and I'd read him and, you know, sort of snarkily laugh to myself when I was in high school, kind of grew out of him after that. But it was a trip to see him in person.
I fell in love when I was younger with, Maddox criticizes children's artwork. Which is still a classic, if you want to look that up. The one that's on blue paper with white crayon. He's like, oh, all white colors, Rachel. Or should I say Hitler?
Well, I don't have any idea who any of these people are. So
you've never heard of Maddox?
Nope.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow. Justin was too busy looking up soccer girl porn when he was younger.
No, it was Dominique Mokianu when I was that young, before she got fat and then had a thyroid problem and then yelled at me when she was trying to cross the road.
Full circle.
That's good. That's how you know I'm a writer. Fucking you call that woman a sitcom writer. I don't want to give that woman any more credit. All right. Do you want to talk about people we actually know who they are? Sort of, maybe?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's do it. And
thanks for taking my intro. In the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a
Mike bad. Pence made the news this week, but not for his hatred or love of Hamilton or anything thereof. No, he made the news because there was a Washington Post profile on Mr. and Mrs. Pence, where one sentence stood out to the army of internet idiots. And the sentence was this: in 2002, Mike Pence told The Hill, which is a publication, that he never eats alone with a woman other than his wife, and that he won't attend events featuring alcohol without her by his side either. Of course, the internet exploded, people claiming Mike Pence must be a sexual predator, or that he doesn't trust himself, or that he thinks he's some sort of sexual Adonis or a closet pervert, some sort of weird Christian reactionary. One Twitter user blogger suggested that Mike Pence must never have hired a single woman in a position of power in any of his business dealings or political life, because you would have to go out to dinner alone with that person at some point, which is a bizarre thing to say. So, of course, I wanted to ask you, Justin, what you thought of Vice President Pence's stance and whether you, when you get in power, will also make the same pledge.
I'll make the opposite pledge. I will only go out to dinner with women by myself with them. That's it. Take the Bill Clinton approach, right? No, I mean, the first question I have for you is, did you come up with that term, army of internet idiots?
Is it that clever?
I like it.
Okay.
The second thing is,
Mikey likes it.
The tweet you pointed out is the one I loved the most about this. How somehow this is sexist on his part. How somehow it means he oppresses women. So he can't hire women because he doesn't go out to dinner with them.
Alone. He will go out to dinner with them.
Hello.
In groups. Keep that in mind. It's not like he refuses to go to dinner with women. Just alone, without his wife.
I mean, aren't we supposed to, like, respect love and love is love and, like, relationships are relationships and we're supposed to mind our business when, like, people are gay or trans or some shit? Like, when Jim Norton's out there fucking chicks with dicks, I'm not allowed to say anything and be like, you know, you're disgusting because that's not really a chick, it's a dude. Why don't you just say you're gay? I can't say shit like that because I'm supposed to respect that. But if these two people make a commitment to each other and that's what he wants to do in order to honor her and cherish her, and that's his definition of honoring and cherishing his wife, all of a sudden that's not allowed?
Yeah, isn't there a deep irony here that the internet was calling him a closet pervert, but if you said that about someone who has sex with trans men, like, you would be shunned by society? And I'm not saying either are perverts. My point is the double standard here is so clearly blatant. And I know James is going to yell at us for bringing up the hypocrisy point, but James, in this case, it is just so shockingly blatant that these people just hate Mike Pence because he has anything to do with Donald Trump or he has anything to do with right-wingism, whatever that is. That's
Why are they so obsessed with Mike's penance? I fucked that up.
Mike Penance?
Yeah, I was trying to make a joke about penis and penance, but it doesn't work. Oh.
Wow, that was terrible. Why are they so obsessed with Mike Pence? It's because he's the Trump VP. I mean, no one talked about Mike Pence when he was the governor of whatever bumfuck state he was, Indiana, I think. No one knew who he was or cared. It didn't matter what he did with his wife or not did with his wife. It's now that he's got the stink of Trump on him, everyone has to make sure that he's the worst human being on the planet below Donald Trump.
Is the stink of Trump Ivanka's new fragrance?
Didn't SNL just do a bit about Ivanka Trump's new fragrance? They called it
something like less clever than what I just said.
Or something like that. I forget. It was dumb.
Stupid.
But James, what do you think about this? Is Mike Pence... So, of course, the response here is like, who gives a fuck, right? Who honestly cares what Mike Pence has decided about his relationship? But let's look at it as something, whether or not it's healthy or unhealthy for someone to do objectively. What do you think about this? Is this something that we should applaud Mike Pence for or tell him to seek help? What's up?
I don't have an answer to that at all, actually. I was actually going to ask you, Daniel, how you felt about that as a married man. But first, something I will say, I've hung out with someone's wife before, just one-on-one, and, you know, nothing happened. But
what?
I felt a little weird about it. I did feel a little weird about it. I'm like... And nothing ended up being weird, but like leading up to the dinner, and then we watched basically this friend of mine, a wife and a man and wife, like I'm friends with both of them, and she wanted to see this Lord of the Rings concert, which was they play the Lord. This sounds kind of lame, but it was actually amazing. They play a Lord of the Rings movie, and then they have a symphony play the soundtrack of the movie, like during the movie. And it was actually amazing, but we saw that together because the dude didn't like Lord of the Rings. And then we had dinner after. And when she said she wanted to do that with me, it was kind of like, it was a little weird, but it was fine. So I don't know. Like, how do you feel about it as a married man?
She
Daniel?
Might as well have invited you to church. The reason the guy wasn't threatened is the thing you just described is like the least sexy thing ever. Like, there was no way that was transitioning into your dick in her mouth. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, that was never really on the agenda to begin with. But like, my dick in her mouth was not on the agenda. But it was a little funny, just the general idea where it's like, okay, I'm going to spend one-on-one time with this dude's wife. Like, it felt, I don't know if it should have or not. Maybe it shouldn't have felt funny, but it did. I'm wondering what you think about that, Daniel.
So, I don't know. It's hard for me to be the standard of anything here. Faiza and I are insanely independent people who are in a relationship. And that is how we view our relationship together, as two independent people acting together in some sense. And I go out to dinner alone with men, women, people who identify as men, I have no idea, all the time, and so does Faiza. And it's not a problem because we talk about our marriage with the other person. It's not like it's a surprise. It's not like, you know, someone thinks they're going on a date with us, and then in the middle we're like, oh yeah, I'm married. Like, it's all up front. It's not even on my mind. Like, it's not a thing where I think this situation is something that could get me in trouble or something that has sexual potential or whatever it is. Because if there was that kind of situation, I wouldn't put myself in it. And neither would Faiza. So if I were to talk to Mike Pence, one I would say is basically like, dude, this is a bit, you know, restrictive. You're probably limiting yourself in the types of friendships and relationships you can have, which is sad for you. But on the other hand, I don't care. I just don't care. Like,
Yeah.
I just, if this is the way he wants to conduct himself, okay. I think he's limiting what he can do in life, but if you want to choose that limit on yourself, so be it.
I mean, it's
that's what I was saying, yeah. Where I was saying, like, who, like, why are we fucking caring about his relationship? Like, why, like, we can't judge anyone else's, but we can judge his? Like, just fucking, like, mind your business.
Wharton professor and forecasting expert says less than 1% of scientific journals actually follow the scientific method. I love that this story is coming in the same episode as the trailer for the sequel to An Inconvenient Truth, by the way. That is my favorite thing. J. Scott Armstrong, Wharton School professor and expert at forecasting, gave a talk recently where he said that fewer than 0.1% of papers actually use the scientific method, which is, to me, shocking, but apparently not all that shocking. According to Armstrong, the criteria necessary to follow the scientific method is eightfold, and I'll let James weigh in on this in a moment, but the eight tests for the scientific method are: one, that it's objective; tests have multiple reasonable hypotheses; two, useful findings; three, full disclosure of methods, data, and other relevant information; four, comprehensive review of prior knowledge; five, valid and reliable data; six, valid and simple methods; seven, experimental evidence provided; and eight, conclusions consistent with the evidence. Armstrong contends that very little of the forecasting for climate change, for instance, follows this scientific method. He said, "We are working on polar bear population forecasts, and we were asked to review the government's polar bear forecast. We asked, could you send us the data? And they said, no. So we had to do it without knowing what the data were." Why is this happening? Of course, Armstrong argues that it's happening because that's where the money is. And you will say anything as a scientist to get more of that sweet government grant money. So, Justin, scandal among the scientific community, or basically confirming what we've all known for years?
I mean, it's scandal, but it's like a scandal that's been slowly burning since, like, the ice caps started melting. So I don't know why anyone's surprised about this.
Well, it's still, I mean, you can have, it's like when we talked about the CIA, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, they can listen in through your TV. Now it's confirmed. And it's like, well, before that, we sort of had a suspicion that that was happening. But now we've had our Alex Jones tinfoil hat suspicions confirmed.
Yeah, I've lost words because didn't we already have this confirmed? Didn't something happen like 2 or 3 years ago where all those fucking emails leaked where people were coordinating faking global warming, and then suddenly those emails were considered fake or some shit? Do you know what I'm talking about?
ClimateGate, yes. I'm familiar with what you're talking about.
It's the same thing, isn't it?
A climate scientists getting together and basically saying, these are the conclusions we've drawn before we do the tests, and all the data should reflect these conclusions. It's like, oh,
yeah. Fuck. It's the same thing.
Wait, what are the details about this in grad school too,
where they talked about like paradigm shifting and shit like that?
If you want to get into the science or the philosophy of science, we can do that. But I would prefer that we leave Clemson's rhetoric program off the table for the moment.
That's fair rhetoric enough. That's fair enough. I think maybe James has more to say about this as a scientist. Then I just like think, I mean, this has been fucking proven with global warming over and over again. They just keep repeating global warming is real, climate change is real, and it's not. And they just fucking keep repeating it. And science doesn't matter.
Well, here's the thing is there. Okay. So, well, to be more specific here, actually to brandish my credentials a little bit, I'm not really a scientist. I'm actually a philosopher of science, specifically trying to develop a scientific method, actually is part of my math book, is devising a new scientific method. So, you know, this is pretty related to what I'm doing, but, anyway, so, this doesn't surprise me in the slightest because the scientific method is flouted in every branch of science, and in global warming, it's obviously going to be the worst because the government funding pretty much only is tore only goes towards, you know, having specific conclusions. The government funding corrupts the objectivity of science. But to go through this list, there's, you know, number one, it has to be objective. It has to test test multiple reasonable hypotheses. And what this would be is like, we have to test to see if the effects we're seeing are man-made or are they natural fluctuations. And so that's a solid piece of the scientific method that, yeah, it doesn't get done, in at least in global warming science. Scrolling down to number four, this is a place where all science, as far as I can tell, every field makes this error, is number four, comprehensive review of prior knowledge. Let me tell you something. I have never read a paper that complies with number four. And when I say this, I mean, I've never read a scientific paper I was actually able to understand and objectively evaluate the significance of the findings. And this includes physics, biology, psychology, like everything. I'm telling you, I've read many papers and number four has never been satisfied. So it doesn't surprise me that he says only 1% of studies follow these eight steps, because I've read, you know, probably on the order of like 50 scientific papers, or attempted to read on the order of 50 scientific papers throughout my life, something like that. And I've never seen anything actually give a comprehensive review of prior knowledge. This is why I'm convinced that experts in the field, when they read other people's papers, they have no idea what they're talking about. Because I've never achieved actual understanding of what a scientific paper is talking about, not on the level that I'm comfortable with actually making commentary on it. Because basically the people writing the papers have no concept of what other people's context of knowledge is. And they're such horrendous communicators that they basically say like, oh, they use all this technical jargon that not even their peers understand. And I can tell you this because I've sat in a room where someone's giving a presentation, which would be like a verbal version of a scientific paper, and they discuss their findings. Like, I've seen a cosmologist, someone who studies the universe as a whole, give a speech on their findings in cosmology, and other cosmologists are zoning out and falling asleep during the presentation because they don't understand what the hell they're saying. I can tell you that this happens in physics. So, this doesn't surprise me at all. You don't even need to like talk about global warming. Like it's very hard for scientists to understand what each other are saying, and our epistemology has gotten way off track. So, yeah, it doesn't. I don't know if does that. Does that kind of make sense? That's probably – or – and are you kind of surprised at why we have this sort of disconnect?
Sorry, I zoned out because I didn't understand what you were saying.
I almost made that joke too. But what I want to know – the one thing didn't make sense to me. I don't understand why cosmologists were at a science conference. Like, why are people who do makeup and stuff there?
Even worse than that, Justin, is that now, or maybe not now, maybe this is an old thing, but like people who do that have taken the moniker aestheticians. Like you actually take the concept of aesthetics, and that is, you do that. Oh, it kills me.
Wait, cosmetologists are called aestheticians now?
It's like,
I thought they were just like people who put makeup on face, like face paint. Aren't they clowns? Like literally, they just paint people's faces?
Acceptable clown makeup artists, yes.
Yeah, and as long as they give me a balloon at the end, I'm happy, right? It's like when you go to the dentist, they give you a toothbrush. You go to the barber, they give you a lollipop. You go to the clown, acceptable clown makeup person, they give you a balloon.
So clown makeup aside, I actually have a question for you guys. Have you guys attempted to read papers in your fields back when you guys were in academia? And have you ever been able to understand them? Because I feel like this revelation I'm making to people might be kind of surprising. Like I'm not exaggerating. I've literally, honestly, fully, without any exaggeration, I've never understood a scientific paper I've read ever, even in my own field, in quantum mechanics. I read kids, when I try to understand something, I fucking read the children's version of it. because that's the only realm where people can actually communicate themselves in any way.
Yeah. So, Justin, I don't know about you. When we were in grad school, we had to read a lot of papers in our field. And so the field of rhetoric is the most convoluted, bastard-filled, nonsense discipline that exists. And the only reason I would argue that it's worse than every other discipline, including philosophy and art, is that it's the oldest academic discipline, so they've had longer to fuck it up. But you will read papers in rhetoric that, like, they will do things like some fucktard who's a famous rhetorician at Clemson wrote a paper that apparently can be read forward or backward.
Oh, it's like, my God.
You think that's an accomplishment? Like, you think that you've communicated something about the field of rhetoric by basically writing a crappy poem?
Can I mention the guy who got his PhD recently and they keep pimping on the Clemson page?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they fucking, this guy, I think his name's A.D. Carson.
Yes.
They keep fucking putting up on the Clemson page, look at this rhetoric student who wrote a rap album as his fucking thesis or whatever is to get his PhD.
His dissertation.
What about all the people who go to fucking, whatever the fuck it's called. I don't know. It's not even called shit. It's called jerking off and taking pictures and then sending it to people and you get a dissertation for it. Like, what about the people who go to, like, music school and, like, study music theory and everything? Like, you're getting a PhD for writing rap for rhetoric theory, and then the school's promoting it? And the worst part is, whenever anyone writes a negative comment about it on the Clemson page, they fucking delete it. Talk about incomprehensible. First of all, I listened to the rap album. It makes no fucking sense. The shitty raps I've written are better than his raps. That's how bad he is.
Well,
and then it has no, like, merit as far as anything intellectual in it. There are no ideas in it. And then the school's promoting it.
Yes, because it makes press, right? Oh, guy writes rap album for dissertation. How cool are we at Clemson that we allow you...
It's because he's black.
Don't say such a thing. Just, that's racist.
They're racist.
Oh, no, he is black.
Because they're afraid people are calling them racist. No, he is black. They're afraid. This is the same guy who, when he went in, this is what these people do, right? This is the same thing they're doing in the science community. It's all a social game. He went in the first year and he said, Clemson's racist and you need to acknowledge its racist history. Then he made it for as long as he's there, he can do whatever he wants because he becomes untouchable because they're afraid to do anything to him because he'll just cry racism. He knew what he was doing, and that's what they do in the science community, too, with global warming. We'll see this with Trailer Takedown, too.
Yeah. James, I only have one other comment about the point number four, comprehensive view of prior knowledge. It's non-existent, even in shitty fields like rhetoric. But when I wrote my master's thesis, it was 40% of my master's thesis was just reviewing the prior theories of visual perception. Because I did a master's thesis on visual rhetoric. And I handed it in.
To be fair.
Yes, Justin.
Point of order, there is no prior knowledge in the field of
Well, there is, but I had to go all the way back to Cicero and Aristotle.
Yeah.
But I handed it in, and literally my thesis committee had no idea what the fuck to do with it.
Yep.
They kept saying, why is this here?
Yep.
And I was saying, because in order to understand my thesis, you have to understand everything that came before it. And they kept telling me to take it out, and I kept telling them to go fuck themselves, and they threatened to fail me if I didn't take it out. And I said, I don't. You can fail me. I won't get my master's degree. I'm not taking it out. It's important.
Oh, my God.
It's how you do science. I mean, to the extent that is science.
Did I tell you what happened at my master's thesis defense?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, my God, because it's like exactly the same story. Like, what happened is I include in my paper, I think something along the lines of like 60% was a comprehensive review of prior knowledge. And the reason I thought it was important, I wrote my thesis on philosophical issues in quantum mechanics. And I went back through the discovery process of quantum mechanics, and I found that the primary equation of quantum mechanics, the Schrodinger equation, is actually dependent only on two principles and nothing else. And that just blew my mind. I was like, holy shit, we're basing our entire like concept of quantum mechanics on two experiments. That was mind blowing to me. So because I thought there's got to be more context involved than just findings from two experiments. And so I talked about that, and then that led to a certain, you know, conclusion and certain possibilities that would lead from that conclusion. And they were just entirely unimpressed by that. They were just like, yeah, so like they just didn't even know what I was saying. Basically, they didn't say, yeah, so they just didn't know what I was saying. Threatened to fail me, and then I just said, well, no, well, what's your argument against my conclusion? And they said, like, oh, so you think you're smarter than Einstein? And I'm like, no, like, I just don't think Einstein knew about these things. But that's, like, but that's, and they're like, well, you realize, like, we don't have to pass you, right? I'm like, okay, well, that's not an argument against my paper. And I passed, and they made me add some bullshit in at the end, and then I was eventually passed. But yeah, it was basically the same story.
Yeah, it got so bad. The arguments between us became so bad, and they threatened to fail me so many times that I brought in outside professors to sit in on my thesis defense so that there would be objective witnesses as to how fucking much I owned this crappy thesis committee, and if they failed me, how badly that would reflect on them. And as a result, they passed me. Because they didn't know I was bringing these outside people in. And when I did, they were dumbfounded and had no idea how to act against professors who did actual work. And it was shocking to them. And it was shocking to me. And it was shocking to the outside professors how stupid they sounded in asking me these questions. Like, how do you defend the idea in your thesis that you claim there's an objective reality? And it was like, I just pointed all over the room and at them and at me.
Aristotle's anyway. Ghost is behind you giving you a high five.
Oh, boy.
Don't ask me. I just wrote some bullshit about, like, South Park and Lost for my thesis, so.
Yeah, by the way, final note on this. I'm sure people, we got to keep the master's thesis talk to under 30 minutes. But they finally basically, we compromised on me adding in weasel word language in like five or six places in the paper where instead of saying like is, I wrote seems to be or is most likely. And like that satisfied them. They took that as a moral victory.
Yeah, because they could argue against you now.
Yes. And I was like, whatever the fuck gets me out of this place, Jesus Christ, you people are all insane.
I don't care about the movie. This is the real panic room.
That's right. Oh, boy. Moving on to a lighter subject, rape.
But no, this is actually a positive article about rape.
Yes. A rape victim has said that a judge who warned that drunk women were putting themselves in danger thinks that the judge is right, saying it is, quote, hard not to blame yourself in that situation. Megan Clark, 19, was raped by a man she met in Burger King after a night out in Manchester. This is in the UK. The trial caused controversy because Judge Lindsay Kushner, female judge, by the way, said that the drunken behavior of some women was putting them at risk. The court saw how Miss Clark acted, and she was putting herself in danger, and basically told her and all other women that, look, you are obviously not to blame here. You are a victim. But at the same time, do you think getting blackout drunk and putting yourself in these situations is a good idea? And so Miss Clark, who gave up the right to be anonymous so she could come out and support these judges' comments, said, absolutely, it's wrong. And it's putting a lot of women in danger because we assume that we can do nothing wrong because this, you know, this whole victim-shaming nonsense shifts all of the responsibility, not blame, but responsibility onto the attacker, and that is simply not true. Justin, positive story about rape?
Well, not about the rape itself. I was being a little flippant when I was saying that.
No.
Like, there's not really a positive story about rape, but the idea that this woman waived her anonymity in order to stand up and say, I agree with the judge, that is a victory for all of humanity. This is a female judge and a female victim standing up and saying these things. I applaud these women and I thank these women for what they've done for themselves. That's the thing that's great about it. Is that's who this really helps. Is it helps themselves. because it makes them remember that they have to be responsible to make good decisions. And that's ultimately the broader culture issue that's at stake here, is this idea that you don't have to make responsible decisions anymore. If anything bad happens to you, it's somebody else's fault. No, you have to try and prevent as many bad things from happening from you by making responsible decisions. I mean, can you imagine if you're just driving and you go through every red light and then somebody hits you and you go, well, they hit me. Don't victim blame me by saying I went through the red light. They're the ones who hit me. That's what that's the equivalent of.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, if you just drive through every fat person on the sidewalk and then be like, look, they were out. I mean, they totaled my car. I had nothing to, they were in the way. That's really.
Well, that's the other thing too, right? This actually, I mean, I didn't add this to the story, but since you brought this up, I'm fucking pulling out of my apartment complex the other day and I'm going slowly out towards the road. And all of a sudden I look and there's a woman standing right next to my bumper. Who the fuck walks across the sidewalk and stops right next to a car? It's like they want to get hit. It's like they're looking to get hit. No, I'm 100% serious. This is all the part of the no responsibility thing. If I'm walking and I see that there's a car close to pulling into the road or close to pulling next to the road, I stop and wait. Because I'm white and a male. I'm going to get hit. It's the same thing when you leave Walmart, right? Or you leave Target. Do you notice that white men stop and look both ways, but anyone else just fucking walks? Have you ever noticed that?
I hate to bring this up, but have you noticed that it's only black people who just jaywalk, like, blatantly in front of cars? Is that, like, a thing?
I wouldn't say it's only black people, but there's a trend. I understand what you're
okay,
saying.
Okay, yeah, I'm totally, they're gonna bring this up later and then destroy me in, like, 20 years. So cut that, actually. So we'll cut that out in post. But seriously, that's gotta be, like, a thing. Someone has to comment on how that's, like, a racial stereotype, because I swear that's the only race of people who just... Plenty of people jaywalk. I mean, I jaywalk, but I only jaywalk when there's no cars. It's only, yes. You know,
happened four times today while I was driving, and the ethnicity of the person in these four instances was 100% of the African nature. So, as Adam Carolla
that's
says,
that's why I use the Target and Walmart example.
As Adam,
because
Carolla
if you go
says,
there, people just walk out of the store. That's it. They just walk out of the. Just they don't stop. Anyway, what does Adam Carolla say?
We will stop stereotyping when it stops being true.
Right, 100%. If you don't believe me, if somebody out there does not believe me, film 24 hours in front of a Walmart or a Target, and then release a time lapse video of everything that happens in that 24 hours. You will see it.
Yes. Anyway, getting back to rape.
I love how we somehow turned rape into racism.
That's what we do here on the Midside.
Integration
I'm insulated,
knowledge.
By the way, because I'm half Mexican, so I can't be a racist, but the rest of you people.
I'm automatically a racist, so it doesn't fucking
no
matter.
Excuse. So, back to this. This whole thing about victim shaming, fat shaming, slut shaming, whatever, is in its entirety a method for taking away personal responsibility and free will. At its core, it is a denial of the concept that we are responsible for our own lives and our own choices. There is no such, no one has ever claimed in the history of law or legal philosophy that responsibility and guilt are the same thing. You can be you can take responsibility for something and not be guilty. I.e., you can be responsible for putting yourself in a bad situation, but the criminal who harms you is still guilty. But that doesn't mean you are not responsible. You are obviously responsible if you put yourself in horrible situations. If you decide to take $100 bills and shove them in your pocket so they're falling out on the ground and then walk in a neighborhood known for having robberies, you are responsible for yourself being robbed, even if the other people are guilty of the crime.
It's the same thing. If you leave your front door unlocked and somebody steals your television, you are not to blame for them stealing your television, but you are responsible for leaving your front door unlocked.
Yes.
Indeed. Now, what psychologically complicates this is that women, unfortunately, it's something about, it is something about our culture and probably like the concept of original sin that has leaked into people's psychologies, that what ends up happening is women, and this is really sad, they end up feeling like the rape was their fault somehow. And so, but the problem is that it just makes it really confusing when you make a point, like a perfectly valid point like you do, Daniel, and then they hear from the other side that you're somehow sexist for saying that. It makes it like a confusing situation for them, just suddenly gets way more confusing, where suddenly they're made to feel as though they have to choose between their guilt and the feminists who say that they have no more like they have no responsibility whatsoever and no free will and they're just a victim. That makes it so fucking confusing for them.
Yeah, but this is what therapy is for.
Yes. Therapy is for that. But also, this is a general rule of cognitive behavior. Like, internalize responsibility, but do not internalize guilt.
Mm. Wow.
Whenever anything happens, anything, someone cuts you off in traffic, you don't get the raise you want at work.
You get slapped by a punk ass.
Exactly. What you should do, and I think what a healthy person does, is internalizes responsibility, i.e., what can I do to change this thing in the future? What is within my purview and my choice to fix this thing? Sometimes the answer is nothing, by the way, but it should be your first instinct to internalize that, but not internalize the guilt.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to distinguish, but I think that's an incredibly powerful cognitive mode of thinking. So
right, and therapy helps you sort those two things out.
Yes.
Yeah. And that is mental health right there, is understanding what is what you can and can't change. And this just muddles the issue so much. It's so sad for all these women who think they want to be feminists and then and they have to deal with these psychological repercussions from rape, and it's all just this big anti-masculine, anti-free will shitstorm for them. Like, that's gotta be just chaos, especially when you're confused by all these emotions you're having.
That's right, James. And speaking of internalizing guilt, oh boy. Students at the University of Regina in Canada this week.
What, the University of Regina?
We were getting there. We'll be hosting a masculinity confession booth, along with another of other workshops and screenings to combat, quote, hypermasculinity. We have all reinforced hypermasculinity one way or another, regardless of our gender, explains the University of Regina event description. Come and share your sins so we can begin to discuss how to identify and change our ways. So, Justin, what do you have to confess about your masculinity?
Guys, everyone, all the guys out there, I need to apologize. I need to take responsibility. All of this feminist shit is my fault. My masculinity is so intimidating and they can't handle it that this is how they respond out of fear. And I need to take responsibility for that.
James, you need to confess anything about your masculinity?
Well, I would like to, I would like to apologize to the audience for, doing math, shooting guns, reading philosophy, eating beef, and all the other masculine things that I do. And in the masculine way, I try to do it. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all of those things.
I personally want to apologize for doing the most oppressive thing out of all of you. I hate to be one-upper, but I have done the most oppressive thing to women out of all of you, which is that I married one of them. And she took my last name. So I've basically obliterated her identity, and I have to apologize for that. So.
Did I get too afraid with me to do that? Like, my masculinity, just they're so afraid of it that they're like, I can't be married to that. It would kill me.
Like, at first, they're, like, a little intrigued, and they're like, can I touch it?
Yeah.
And then they do, and then it scares them, and they run away. Like, at the glistening masculinity that you have. The throbbing, rock-hard masculinity that...
Hey, Mr. Garrison, I didn't ask you to write a romance novel.
So, this is all retarded. Just want to point that out. I mean, I tried to watch some of the video about this whole thing.
The fucking video!
Oh, I watched it.
Oh
I watched
God, the video. It's like 48 minutes and 19 parts.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be like a 10-minute video, so I started watching it, and it's just like a bunch of guys talking about like, oh, nobody let me cry when I was a kid, and I couldn't express my emotions, and blah, 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 blah. And then it just kept repeating that, and I was like, this is an hour of this shit? Like, again, go to fucking therapy.
Oh, that's not the video I watched. All I watched was just a 90-second description of what was going on, and in the background was just a bunch of dudes crying. So I thought that was just so modern art. What struck me about that, though, Justin, is that, you know, this is classic leftism, is they latch on to a truth, which is that our culture equates, falsely, masculinity with the repression of emotions. And, you know, and that leads to a bunch of problems. As they said, the repression of emotions leads to violent outbursts, or you could say maybe irrational outbursts. And that's true. That is a problem, and it's a result of our, you know, the duty mentality and the stifling of emotions. But you know, so they point out a problem, and then they offer more poison as the solution. Classic left,
classic leftist.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that there are certain issues with the gender roles that exist. I mean, that's why the red pill MRAs have valid points to what they're talking about. And when you talk about things like male disposability, that shows how there are issues with the way men are treated in this culture. I mean, the number one thing is the male genital mutilation that occurs, isn't it? And nobody talks about that. And that's because we have certain perceptions of, you know, what a man is and what a woman is. So you're right. There are valid points that are out there. But then they use it to ultimately undermine the self-esteem of the people who exist as they do. I mean, the men in this video... they looked beaten down.
Yeah.
They looked broken. No one's looking for you to confess, like, a legitimate thing you feel guilty about. They want you to basically admit you're a bad person. It's the same thing with doing, you know, that's why the original sin thing is such a good comparison. It's the same thing with going and doing confession at Catholic Church. They want you to feel guilty for living. And it's the same thing here. They want you to feel guilty for being a male.
That is entirely what it is. Come tell us why you're guilty for being a man. Absolutely. Nailed it.
Yeah, I did. With my masculinity, I nailed it. Do you want to nail some other stuff?
Like,
let's do it.
What?
Like art? Let's nail some art.
Sounds
yeah.
Kinky.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Some of this stuff is like Pixar and shit, so I don't know if we want to get kinky with that, but we're going to talk about it in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Quick review to start this episode, and we can do a quick roundtable of it because it was only about a minute and a half long. Pixar released a short set in the world of Coco called Dante's Lunch. This follows a dog as he tries to get a bone, and the bone seems to be alive, and then it ends up in a skeleton.
Good synopsis.
I liked some... What? Good summary? Good. That's a summary. Isn't that the summary? That's an accurate summary.
That summary
is
probably 41% the length of the short. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And the bone was 41% the length of mine. Oh.
What? Not appealing.
Okay. So, I have three things to say about this. One, As a marketing piece, I would much prefer things to be like this. Trailers for movies to be like this. Create a short in the universe to make me care about the universe. I loved it as a marketing piece. Two, I laughed throughout. I found it to be hysterical. From the moment the dog like starts sniffing the bone and it hits him on the head, I just like it. I think it's funny. But at the same time, isn't this the same? This is my third comment. Isn't this the same exact thing as Scrat in the Ice Age series?
Yeah, I'd say there's some similarities there.
Only I liked it. Unlike that bullcrap, this was funny and cute. Not gross. God, yeah, the ice. No one does CGI better than Pixar. It's the dog has this clarity to him, but still so much cuteness and artisticness. And you know, with the Ice Age rat, they went too far in the direction of gross, like kind of just a weird ass grotesque figure that was just weird with the big eyeballs and shit. This little dog was cute. Same idea, but they fucking did it right. No one does it better than Pixar.
I won't add much to that because I also enjoyed it. I would say that the thing that they do particularly well is condensing all of this. Nothing is drawn out unnecessarily. To use a term from Edward Tufte, who's a great visual rhetorician, they didn't have any quote-unquote pridefully obvious presentations, which is, oh, look how great we are, so we're going to spend an extra 10 seconds looking at this thing unnecessarily. Mm. It's super condensed. They cut out everything. They cut out everything that wasn't needed to tell the tiny little story they wanted to tell. And then they used everything at their disposal to tell this story. Repetition, metaphor, cool camera tricks, audio. They directed the thing. And that is so often what you don't see with animation is actual directing. And it starts literally at the beginning when the trash can falls over, the dog falls out, and the foreground is blurry, and you focus on the dog. But when the dog sees the bone becomes in focus, and the dog is out of focus. The directing for that, while so simple, is fucking brilliant.
Mm.
It's brilliant. And it's brilliant, and you don't even notice it. I mean, I'm only noticing it because I watched it like 9 times so I could do some sort of analysis. But, like, it's so incredible what they can do with so little. And that's what's amazing about Pixar is they take the nuance of things and they turn it into a genuine story. So, brilliant, awesome. Piper is still 1,000 times better, but that's because it's a longer short and it's whatever. But this kind of thing, Justin, you're absolutely right. If more companies, more studios did this as a marketing mechanism, people would fall in love with movies again.
Yeah. I mean, why do I want to watch a trailer that gives away the entire movie where I can watch like a little quick 1.5 minute prequel to the movie?
Yeah.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
All right. We already saw one of these trailers, but this is the second one. But it adds a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets. We see much more of what the mission is, and we actually see the City of 1,000 Planets in this trailer. We see more of the dynamic between the two, I don't know, what are they, agents?
Yes.
The guy and the girl, Valerian, and what's her name?
Loreline or something like that.
Loreline, that's yeah. It, Loreline. Not Madeline, Loreline. So that's the basic summary of this. Although, this is a trailer that you can't really do justice. You have to watch this trailer to understand what it is. And I'm just going to come out right in the front of this. And I already, I hugged this last time, but I am hugging this again. I am in love with this movie before it has even come out.
Hug!
I like it. It's a highly visual cinematic feast. Very ambitious. It has the same sort of visual style. We talked about this before of The Fifth Element, because it's made by the same folks who did The Fifth Element. Are they the same director?
Yes, the same director.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
And, I love this style of sci-fi where it's this grand epicness, but yet there are characters who make choices that affect this enormous, enormous plot. So I'm excited. Looks cool. I'm a little worried about the main actor and actress pulling this off, but I'm still outright hugging.
Hug!
Can I ask something about the main actor?
Yeah.
Does he look like he has cancer?
he looks like he needs, a blood transfusion or a kidney or something. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just making sure.
Valerian, the cure of 1,000 chemos.
That's right.
I tackled this last time because I was just confused. I didn't know how a city could have 1,000 planets. Watching this trailer, I understood how that was a thing, and it was fucking amazing. I love, and they explain what the city of 1,000 planets is, and it sounds so odd. Whenever I see sci-fi and it's dark, I just feel like, oh man, that's such a shame. Now we're seeing sci-fi that has this optimistic view. They talk about how awesome the city is and how, you know, it's a good thing, and these agents are protecting it, and aside from the actor, I have the same reservations you do, Daniel. It almost seems like they're taking like the protagonists from American Ultra, and then they're putting them into this universe. Like, but hopefully that it's actually kind of cool. But I'm hugging this. I'm gonna watch it now. It looks pretty cool.
Justin, we need to be on the lookout for these directors, because while 2 doesn't make a pattern, and I haven't seen their other work, like Lucy or The Professional, but like this movie is basically like an allegory of like the Library of Alexandria being sacked by the Gauls or whoever it was, the barbarians, I'll just say, because I don't know which specific barbarians it was. And their first movie, the bad guy was a Keynesian. Like, his whole thing was like, we can only bring economic success by destroying everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a little bit curious now.
Work with Bruce Willis on the first movie.
Yes. My curiosity is peaked. I'm not saying that they're full-blown romanticists or have a good philosophy, but I'm saying I'm interested.
Well, how about this then? We need to have a topic for our next Patreon-only episode. Why don't we watch Lucy and discuss it?
Oh, boy. Let's throw it to the listeners. Listeners, what do you think of that idea? Tweet at the Midside, comment on the Facebook.com/the
This is Daniel's way of begging you to get him out of watching
Please
Lucy.
Please get me out of watching Lucy. But if you really want to see it and want us to talk about it, I will, but I don't want to.
I think it's worth the potential of this guy being a great director. And I think I want to see it now because I want to see if he can go into that pantheon. And one last comment before we move on. In defense of the actor,
yeah.
I do see shades of Bruce Willis in Fifth Element in his performance, which I think is intentional on the director's part. So he may have been cast for that reason.
Hmm.
So he's like the emo version of Bruce Willis?
You know what? That's actually 100% what I was thinking. So kudos to you, James. I wasn't going to say that, but that is 100% what I was thinking, yes.
It could backfire, but it could be pretty cool, too. Like, I don't know. He looks like he could be cool, but well, tentative hug of the dude, too.
Second trailer.
Ferdinand is an animated retelling of the classic children's story Ferdinand the Bull. It's from a upstart animation studio. Daniel, maybe you can confirm that or not. And it's starring John Cena, the professional wrestler from Massachusetts. I didn't find anything impressive about this trailer, and John Cena is doing the typical voice acting we've talked about where he's just doing his John Cena voice. So all I could think of the whole time was John Cena, and I was just waiting for the bull to say, "You can't see me."
Tackle.
Yeah. So, not impressed by this trailer. I think this was a rush job trailer. It seemed to me like that there was some marketing thing that they wanted to hit on, and I don't know, maybe they wanted to get it in front of a certain movie that's coming out. I'm not sure. Because it was kind of a trailer that isn't a typical trailer. It just had a cool song and they put some scenes in. And terrible trailer. Looks like a terrible movie.
Tackle.
But this is a remake of a Disney short from the 30s. Based on a book that's even older than that. So, I don't know.
Who's the studio? Do you know them? Or are they upstart, like I said?
I don't think they're upstart. I want to say Blue Sky Studios would be another Disney studio, but I need to double check on that. They have this whole Blue Sky thing going on at Disneyland. Have you ever seen like in California Adventure, there's an area sort of by the Mexican restaurant, that's the best I can tell you, that's called like Blue Sky something or other. It was a Walt Disney
term. Okay. Anyway.
I didn't look that up and confirm, but I'll get back to you.
Okay. James?
I actually liked this. I thought it looked kind of – I was a little bit I was really iffy until the actual bull in the china shop thing where he's trying to be so careful not to break anything, like, and it just doesn't work out. I thought that was just kind of funny. I'll tentatively. Maybe this is a thing to watch with the girlfriend.
That can be your excuse for seeing it. Because when I saw that china shop scene, I was like, this is so obvious. This is like the most obvious way you could have taken
it,
this.
It is, but I was still, yeah, I thought the same thing, but it was still funny.
So Blue Sky Studios is owned by 21st Century Fox. And James, you'll be, want to know that they did Ice Age. And in All fact, right. Scrat, the character from Ice Age, is the studio's mascot.
All right.
They also.
I love how James somehow accidentally contradicted himself from the first trailer or from the review. That's funny.
So they've done like the Peanuts movie and Rio and Horton Hears a Who. The one good movie they've done on here that I liked was Robots. Have you watched that?
Yeah, I've seen that. It's pretty good.
So.
But just how do you end up with John Cena voicing an animated movie? How does that happen? I love John Cena. I watch pro wrestling, and John Cena is one of my favorites. But as a voice actor? Like, I mean, did you guys know it was John Cena and know who he is?
I didn't know it was him, and when you said John Cena, I thought, isn't he a guy who does, you know, beating up things?
Yes. So what did you think of the vocal performance of Ferdinand before you knew it was John Cena?
I didn't.
Right, that's my point. Yeah, exactly. All right. Point proven.
Third trailer.
An inconvenient sequel, Truth to Power, is exactly what it sounds like. Al Gore is releasing a sequel to An Inconvenient Truth, and it seems to just be, from my perspective, a hit piece on Trump. So it starts out with anti-Trump stuff, then it starts out showing the 9/11 memorial being flooded, because apparently that's global warming's fault.
Oh my God.
And then it ends very bizarrely with him saying, they think that we're going to live on Mars and colonize Mars, but this is our home. And I just wanted to be like, did you not watch Interstellar?
I will let James rant about this one first.
Well, first of all, just the weird ingenuine sentimentalism in this where it's like, oh my God, we made so much progress with this meeting of the international community and we made this deal, and then it shows Donald Trump up there blustering his head off. Then it cuts back to Al Gore just looking really disappointed. I laughed so hard when that's, oh, I'm so sorry that your bullshit little deal is getting reversed. But what was funny is they talk about the 9/11 memorial getting flooded. And, you know, apparently Al Gore says like, oh, by 2016, or he says something like that, the 9/11 memorial will be flooded because, you know, sea levels will have risen to that level. And then they talk about how the 9/11 memorial did get flooded, but then they proceed to even include the details of like why that doesn't mean anything, because it got flooded during a fucking hurricane. So it's just that it's like, wait, your point is that the earth is going to globally rise in temperature, the ice caps will melt, the sea levels will rise, and Manhattan will get flooded. Like, okay, I understand your concern there, dude, but then you present as evidence it getting flooded during a hurricane. It's just like, it's a movie for people who are willing to just go there and have their political beliefs just validated. It's political validation porn. We need to come up with a new topic for this. It's political validation porn. Like a lot of Rush Limbaugh's like this, where you just show up and you just get mad and you're like, yeah, those fucking Democrats, or you're like, oh my God, Trump is just you know, we just show up and you get this just emotional validation, and that's its only purpose. That's what this movie is.
Well, I think that's a great point. And Daniel, I'm going to go here because I'm going to give you a good transition. This reminded me very much of watching Gasland. And this is actually something I said about Hillary during one of the debates, where Al Gore in the middle of this trailer is like, we have to do this for the future of the world and for our children and blah, blah, blah. Can we just shut the fuck up and do stuff that's good because we want it to be good? Like, why are we so obsessed with, like, this is my legacy and this is going to be our legacy and this is what we have to do so we can be good people for the future? It's the same thing with Gasland. It was more Josh Fox just wanted to be like, look at how big my dick is. And this is the same thing as Al Gore. It's like, look, when Clinton was in the office, I was fucking women too. You guys just didn't hear me talk about it. I mean, that's all this shit is. Like, it's, I mean, James, you're saying it's validation. It's validation on the people seeing it. It's virtue signaling from the people making it.
Yeah.
I think the biggest signal of the person making it right now is I need more money. Yeah. Because Al Gore, his whole thing is he became uber rich and he's still getting uber rich off of carbon displacement, or what is that called? Carbon offsetting things, where companies will buy quote unquote carbon offsets so that they can feel like they're morally polluting or whatever it is. And Al Gore holds stock in like all those major companies that do the carbon offsetting stuff. And in fact, Al Gore held stock in companies where if we had had a cap and trade system in the United States, Al Gore would have been one of the wealthiest people in the world. He would have been a multi-billionaire. So, you know, he is not without self-interest in this whole global warming thing being a huge fucking deal, because he makes a lot of fucking money if it is. I've been looking for the article on the first Inconvenient Truth, and I can't find it, but I will find it for the Midsiders. Someone did an analysis of all of the claims made in an Inconvenient Truth, and these numbers are not accurate, but it's something to the effect of, like, there are 52 claims made in an Inconvenient Truth, and thus far, 48 of them have not come true. And the others just haven't not come true yet because they just we haven't gone far enough in time, based on his own predictions. So,
well, that was the funny thing about what James was saying about the trailer. Like, he refuted his own evidence about the 9/11 memorial.
In his own trailer.
And I understand they were doing it because it was the 9/11 memorial, but that's the one piece of evidence you have that global warming is happening.
Right?
Hey, global warming's happening. The 9/11 memorial is flooded. Okay.
Oh my God. Oh.
Yeah, it's nonsense. We're never going to get tired of this kind of crap because we're virtue signalers, us Americans. But I hope that this is a new generation of people who, to some degree, go to this documentary with a tiny bit more skeptical of an outlook. After every single doom and gloom prediction by the global warming alarmists has been false. Every single one. There's a fantastic meme that goes around every once in a while that says, when Al Gore was born, only 3,000 polar bears roamed the Arctic. Now, just 30,000 of them remain.
I love that shit.
It's like, not, I would take them even a little bit seriously if any prediction these fuckers make had ever come true. None of them have. We were supposed to have increased hurricanes. We've had the lowest number of hurricanes in recorded history. We were supposed to have increased tornadoes. We have the lowest number of tornadoes in recorded history. More people are supposed to die of weather-related causes. Weather-related deaths are now down 98% from 1900. Nothing they have ever predicted has come true. The climate models.
Now that's with Hurricane Katrina. With Hurricane Katrina, the weather is still
that's
down.
Right.
The weather-related deaths.
That's right. 98% since 1900. Fuck. Thank you, Justin, for destroying my beautiful train of thought there. But, oh, the models, the climate models. If you look at, someone collected every single climate model that was done for the past 10 years and put them on a chart where they thought the temperature would be, and it's all these giant hockey stick nonsense, and the actual weather temperature is like 40 or 50% below even the lowest model's predictions. Not a single model, not one Literally, not one model predicted what the actual temperature would be in the climate. How can you take these fuckers seriously anymore? How? So,
because he made a cool movie.
That said, I'll go ahead and hug this one because I'm gonna see it.
Hug? Are you? Ironic hug.
I have to destroy it. It is my mission to destroy these fuckers.
I still haven't seen the first one.
Oh, it's terrible. It's Al Gore. It's a lecture by Al Gore where he's on a hydraulic lift. He's like, "This is the climate. I have a stick." Yeah, it's a lot of that.
James, tackle.
I'll hug it in the same way Daniel did. Maybe I will see this, if only just to watch Al Gore's dejected face again.
All right. You did it to me now, all right? Fuck you guys. When I go see a movie like Get Out or any other fucking movie so I can critique it and review it for the Midsiders, you can't fucking say anything to me anymore, all right?
Yeah, we're gonna still, so...
And every time you do, I'm going to say, that's an inconvenient truth. I have an inconvenient truth for you guys.
Hashtag fake news.
Yeah.
So you're tackling?
Clearly.
Tackle. Final trailer.
This swept the internet this week. The remake or adaptation of It by Stephen King finally released a trailer. This trailer involves everything you would think it would. Jump scares, children, and a scary clown?
Eh.
Let me just give a little review of this trailer. I laugh hysterically at this trailer. The reason I laugh hysterically at this trailer is I don't know how someone couldn't have cut this for comedy. So it starts out with two kids, older brother and a younger brother, and the older brother is helping him put together this paper boat. And the paper boat, I'm laughing thinking about it. I actually made an animated GIF of this and sent it to the thread. I don't know if you remember this, Daniel.
I was wildly confused at the time.
Because you hadn't seen the trailer yet, right? But then when you saw the trailer, you're like, oh, now I know what I did. So the younger kid takes the boat and he goes in the street. And it's all rain in the street because of global warming. And there's all sorts of water and flooding. And the boat starts going down the street. And then for some reason, there's like a construction or police barricade in the middle of the street. And the kid just fucking runs in and he hits it straight on the forehead and he collapses.
Yeah.
And then the boat goes down a storm drain and he looks down there and there's a clown. And it's not scary at all. There's just a clown there. And it's like, okay, there's a clown there. And the rest of the trailer continues like that. But because it starts with I guess it's supposed to be a jump scare when he hits the thing. But to me, it's hilarious. It just makes the whole trailer funny to me.
I laughed. Yeah.
When he hit the thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if that was intentional on their part. They were trying to make fun of a jump scare. Or if no one watched the trailer after the editor cut it. But, yeah.
The thud and everything. Like, how is it not cut comedically?
Exactly. All you needed was the banana peel sound. The woo! He slips.
Especially because it's a little kid and he like crumbles to the ground.
He still runs pretty fucking fast and catches up with that boat.
This is
a future really track star.
This is really funny to me because it's almost as though I'm acting like a control group on this hitting the barricade on the head, because when I watched this, I think I was like putting my pants on or something, like while it was running, like, so I think I didn't see that part. I don't remember him hitting his head, so I watched only the trailer. I only was looking at the screen for the trailer, like for the rest of it, and I actually thought that this was pretty scary. And I thought, like, wow, like I don't like horror movies, but this sounds kind of scary, like this might be fun. So the rest, as far as I can tell, the rest of it was like, actually seemed like a scary movie. Like, I like it how you never get a good look at the clown's face. So that makes it a little scarier. But it's because I didn't see this barricade slapstick you're talking about.
But here's the other thing about the clown. So I had two other people explain this to me. because I was like, this is fucking stupid. It's a movie about a scary clown. First of all, watch Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Second of all, fuck off. Yeah, exactly. But this movie is actually not about a clown. The clown is one manifestation that the evil that infests the town takes.
Yes.
Mm.
Yet they market the fuck out of this clown, and that's how people associate it. I thought the clown was it. It is the evil, and it just takes the form of the clown. Yet this trailer, you would think it's just about a clown serial killer, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
There is the part with the projector that goes crazy, which is a little mystical.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's a hint.
I just thought the clown had powers.
Right. Yeah, that's what I thought, but maybe they're hinting that it's like, oh, the clown is actually everybody. Or, you know.
We're all the clown.
Clown lives matter.
Tag, you're it.
I'd watch that movie.
Yes.
The movie's called Tag, and the tagline is you're it.
That's right. What they should have called It Follows.
Yep, that's right. So, pass, tackle.
Tackle.
The first one was kind of stupid, and it had Tim Curry in it, and Tim Curry's better than all of us. And so I can't even imagine this one is going to be even moderately interesting. So,
what if this clown was played by Steph Curry?
it'd still be way overrated.
James?
I'll watch this.
Hug.
I love how this week James is going to watch an Inconvenient Truth sequel, Ferdinand, and It.
Yeah, what? Shit, I don't know if I want to commit to all of that.
What a range, James. Yeah, Justin?
Obviously, I'm tackling the shit out of this, unless it's proven to be really funny. Although, at the same time, if it actually is about what I was told it's about, and it's well executed on that level, I might watch it. But it kind of pisses me off. I mean, we started this segment talking about how awesome the marketing for Coco is.
Yeah.
And how creative it is to do that short. And then we end it with a trailer that's not even about what the movie's about. So we see the two ends of marketing in this section this week.
Yeah. The only Stephen King book that needs a massive remake in a modern style is The Stand. Because The Stand only got a shitty made-for-TV movie. And it's such a better book than that. Such a better book than that.
Well, be prepared, because the next Stephen King thing they're doing is a missed TV show. All right, let's head on to other things that make Daniel go, It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit, what job exists because we are stupid? And I assume there are multiple ways you guys could interpret this question.
This is such a good question. I think about this all the time, implicitly.
So then what are your answers, James, if you think about it all the time? You can go first.
So, meter maids. Although, yes, just meter maids. Tax lawyers. Tax accountants. Everyone in the government other than the police and legislators and judges and military and patent examiners. So that is so many people that you could just list off. Just... there, it is so often that I just look at someone's job and think I would shoot myself in the balls if I had that job because it is so stupid.
Yeah. So I look at those jobs that exist because we're stupid, like we're being sort of taken advantage of by the government. I don't know. In a certain sense, that's the kind of stupid. I agree with you. It fits into that category. I took it a slightly different way, which is like, we are still being taken advantage of, but we're being taken advantage of because we're basically chimps. And those jobs to me are like palm reader, fortune teller, reverend. So, yeah, I don't know. Justin?
It's interesting, such different interpretations of this question. So James sort of took the one I expected both of you to take, which is like long range, we're being stupid as a culture, so we have these jobs. And then you took like the dupe jobs. But what about the jobs that are just like only happen because people can't fucking like take care of themselves and tie their shoes type deal?
Do millennials have professional shoe tires now?
I don't know. That was just something I was making up on the
top of my
head. Teacher
of adulting classes?
Yeah.
Wait, what actual jobs are you referring to, Justin?
I don't know. I couldn't think of any, so I was hoping if I said this and just kept talking, you guys would have something spur your thoughts.
We would give flesh to the Platonic form of this concept that you have.
No, I mean, the most accurate one you came up with is like tax lawyer, right? Like, how easy is it actually just to go on TurboTax and do your taxes yourself? Like, why do you need to hire someone to fucking do it?
It's really fucking hard if you own a business and do have a lot of business interests. You cannot just go on TurboTax if you're someone like my dad.
Fine.
Yeah.
But what about back in the day where we had people pump our gas for us?
Yeah. Or in the states where they have to have that. That's a job where
it's like
stupid.
Four left.
Yeah. Oh, it's a good question. It's a good one to think about, because to me it's like, are we stupid or is there a law? And then, are we stupid because there's a law? Thus, is the lawmaker the job because we're stupid? Yeah. Makes you think, Justin. Sure. Makes you think.
I know, that's why I included it, and I thought it might be a good discussion, but I guess fucking not. All right. All right, want to go to the next and last Reddit?
I just want to go home.
Go home? Where are you? You're not at home?
I am, but... you hold me hostage at this desk every week now.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome to my life where I sit in this leather chair and my sweat, and it's awesome.
Welcome to the sweat side.
Last Reddit. This is a serious Reddit.
No.
Serious. What are the signs that someone is manipulative or is a manipulative or toxic person?
Well, if they've recently eaten large amounts of like uranium, they're going to be toxic to you. So,
wow,
serious,
oh,
Daniel.
It's serious. I forgot. Yeah. April Fools.
I mean, that was seriously not funny.
Since we can now do April Fools on the 31st of March, I declare that we can also do April Fools on April 2nd.
Yeah, by the way, that my response to you on that thread. So I posted a thread about the Hulu joke Who.
Yeah.
And Daniel was like, well, it's April Fool's Day. And I was like, well, it's not April Fool's Day. And he said Netflix. You said Netflix has it up already, too. And I posted a long rant about how it's not fair that they can just start doing April Fool's Day pranks every day. And that shit was funny. And no one like gave it any credit.
Because we were all too busy avoiding the internet that day.
Yeah, fuck you guys. It was funny.
So, signs someone is manipulative or toxic. I think one of the key indicators is that, and I think someone in the Reddit thread said this, if I remember correctly, which is like everything in their life is someone else's fault. Everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They have no sense of personal responsibility. It's just everywhere they go, their boss is an asshole, their significant other is an asshole, their landlord is an asshole. And I concede that many people in the world are assholes, but if nothing in your life is your responsibility, if everything is done to you, I suspect that person is being manipulative to everyone else. They're trying to get sympathy or empathy or something. So,
right, because, I mean, your boss can suck, but then you have to say, well, how did I get myself in this situation to have a shitty boss?
Yeah, Adam Carolla often, you know, will, when someone calls up and goes, oh, the boss fired me for no reason. For no reason. Yeah, just no reason. Say, well, what would the boss say if I asked him why you were fired? Oh, well, you know, I didn't show up on time for 16 weeks, but other than that, there's no reason. Well, okay. Yeah. So, and the corollary to that, by the way, I found is that people to whom all these incredibly coincidental and amazing things happen on a daily basis, except that you're never with them when these things happen. Ever.
I'm laughing so hard right now.
I wonder why. Yeah. Maybe a certain
literally
ex?
These Daniel has said these two descriptions to me of my ex-girlfriend before, like literally word for word.
It's like, yeah, she meets a celebrity every other day, Justin, and you're somehow just not there with her ever. Isn't that amazing to you? Isn't that
somehow she had pictures of her with the celebrities, though. Like, and is Paul Scheer really a celebrity? Like, meeting Paul Scheer at the box store, like, isn't that like the Container Store? Like, does that really count?
I don't know. James, any insight here?
Mostly it, like, this is a type that isn't quite as, I don't know how helpful this is going to be, but the way I sort of frame this, it's anyone who takes skepticism seriously. There's a lot of people who talk about, like, oh, there's no such thing as absolute truth. There's no such thing as right and wrong. Like, you really can't judge other people. Like, there's a lot of people who say that in philosophy class, but they don't apply it to their lives at all, actually. The people who do apply that to their lives, or actually, more importantly, the people who really seriously try to exact those standards on you in their actual social interactions, like, oh, well, you can't judge other people, or, oh, well, you can't really ever know anything for certain, so you should suspend judgment right now. That's something you really got to watch out for. That's because no one really takes that shit seriously, except when they're trying to get something out of you.
That's right, i.e. the entire rhetoric department at Clemson University.
Well, I mean, and the entire social justice movement. What James is basically referring to is the infallibility of feelings and emotions. Oh, well, I feel this way, therefore you did something wrong. Or I'm upset at your actions, therefore I did something wrong, or you did something wrong. And I speak from firsthand experience with that. It was always, oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter what you did in the past. It doesn't matter how much you've proven yourself. And I would say that's probably a cognate of it as well. It doesn't matter how much you've proven yourself. You don't have any goodwill with a manipulative or toxic person. It's what have you done for me lately, right? It's the people who are like, oh, well, you know, cut Tom Brady. If he has one bad game, cut him. What? Like, at a certain point, like, you win 5 fucking Super Bowls, you earn some sort of respect, don't you? And it's the same thing in a relationship, right? I mean, you're going to fuck up at some point, and as long as you're fucking up in a benevolent way, why do you, does that mean, like, you're an awful person?
Yes.
That's kind of the way it is. And the way I would identify this, and I think, James, you're 100% correct about the philosophical motivations, and I've put some of the psychological motivations here, but I think the way to identify this is, can you have a rational discussion with them or rational disagreement with them where it doesn't turn into a big fight, or they actually listen to what you're saying and change what they're saying based upon what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Do they keep sticking to the same message no matter what? Or do they actually acknowledge, oh, you have a view of things that have happened and you have something to contribute here? When I talk to people now and I say something and they're like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. I'm like, really? It is? That's a good point?
God, you're like a battered spouse. Like this,
no, dude, are you kidding me? The other day, right, I'm hanging out with this girl and I get a Snapchat message. And I go, shit. It's like, why am I saying shit? Like, I got a Snapchat message. Like, people get Snapchat messages. And I look at the phone and I go, oh, it's just my friend Ben. He's in Chicago. I only talk to him on the internet. He's a rapper. And the girl just goes, okay. And then, like, 2 days later, I'm talking to her and I go, you know, did you think it was weird that I explained myself like that? And she goes, yeah, but I understood it because I had an ex who was obsessed with knowing what was on my phone. So I figured that was the same thing with you. And I was like, wow, I am a battered spouse.
That's right. She didn't smack the phone out of your hand and kick you in the balls and call you a horrible cheater.
Right. Because I didn't think that was going to happen. But my first thought was like, she's going to wonder who's messaging me at like 12 midnight. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just because he was drunk. And when he gets drunk, he sends stupid snaps.
Yeah.
But I felt the need to explain myself.
Yep.
Anyway.
One of the things that was said in this thread that I like the summary of it is whenever you're around a type of manipulative person, you always have this feeling like you're supposed to say, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good indicator.
Yeah. Right. And you have to be on guard because something might set them off.
Yep.
For me, it was no matter what I did. Like, it got to a point when I was in that relationship that I kept saying the good thing. Like, there were a couple good things I did, like really good things that were like, you know, let me put it this way. When her sister got married, I wasn't invited to the wedding, but I drove her down to San Diego, and then I hung out in like a small town down there for like 5 to 6 hours. And I never got a thank you. I never got a, oh, this is awesome. And anytime she's like, you don't do anything for me, blah, blah, I would bring that up, and she would say, why do you keep bringing the past up? Like, it didn't fucking matter anymore.
What have you done for me in the last 41 seconds?
Like, can you imagine, like, Robert Kraft, like, Tom Brady comes in and is like, hey, Robert, you remember when I won those 5 Super Bowls? Tom.
Why do you keep bringing up the past?
Yeah, why do you keep bringing up the past?
Exactly. Yeah, good times.
Yeah. Thought I'd share some of that with you Midsiders. You're welcome. Oh, that's right, it's me. What did we learn this trip? I was having a reflective moment. I was thinking, I go, how is this going to affect my future by having this now? Having this on tape now. So, Daniel, what did you learn?
I learned that Justin's masculinity is just—it's just too big for some women. They just can't—they can't handle it, and it's basically the biggest problem in Justin's life is that he has too big of a masculinity. That's really—it's just too large. It doesn't fit anywhere. It's just, yeah, scares women.
I'm laughing so hard right now.
It's just—I mean, yeah.
Such big.
James, what did you learn?
I feel like I learned the effect that some like bad filmmaking has on a film overall, because that little slapstick moment in the It trailer ruined it for you guys, but since I didn't see it, I was still able to enjoy it. And I usually don't like horror movies. So maybe I'm just in a good mood and I'm saying yes to everything today. I don't know.
Do you like...
No, it's a great point.
But do you like horror movies? Because Hulu has a new series called Harlot.
So. Ooh. Harlot is one of my favorite words for whore, by the way. I used to call people a harlot back in high school. People got really confused.
I like Jezebel. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned that I'm really confused right now, and I don't want to talk about it.
Excellent. Well, if you don't want to talk about it, go to iTunes. Give us a
five-star review and say nothing.
That's right. Just be like, I don't really want to share.
I'm confused and don't know what to say. Yeah, but 5 stars, of course.
5 stars. None of your damn business. Want to fight about it? Yeah. Just do that for us. And then you can follow us on all the social medias. That's Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat at the Midside. And Justin's really, what's the word? Fucking active on Snapchat, I think is the two words. So you should really hit him up there, because he needs more friends. So,
Well, I don't know anymore, because I don't know where I'm going to post my stories from now on, because now there's Instagram, there's Snapchat, there's Facebook Messenger, and there's the Facebook news feed.
Oh, yeah.
So where do you post your stories now?
Now there's InstaFace. Yeah. Face chat, InstaFace, what are we calling it? I don't know. I haven't decided yet as a culture, but you can also go to themidside.com/podcast, listen to old episodes, and then you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or through liberty.me. Thanks to the libertarians over there for helping us get the word out here at the Midside. And then, of course, we have patreon.com/themidside. Patreon. So much love for Patreon. It allows us to keep the lights on, which is great. I have a light on right now, right next to me. One light. Keeping it on via Patreon. Patreon, you go there, you subscribe, you say, I'm going to give $1 every time these guys do a show. Just $1 every time they do a show. That's like one a week, right? And that honestly helps us pay for hosting, advertising, new equipment, hopefully getting the echo out of certain recordings at some point. And we love it. We love our Patreon subscribers, and we're going to have more Patreon-exclusive content, especially I think this summer. When my crazy work life dies down, I'll be able to do a lot more with Justin on these Patreon-only subscriptions. So be on the lookout for that stuff. Tell a friend. That's the most important thing you can do. Tell a friend. Just pound it on the table. I told a friend this week about the Midside by wearing my Hail Snydra t-shirt to a party last night where I was the beer specialist, Justin. I was walking people through tastings of Dogfish Head beer, and all
I've heard of this experience.
All like 12 of them ish were like, "Who is that? What is your shirt?" And I got to like rip open my jacket and be like, "It's Zack Snyder." And I said, "If you would like to learn more about Zack Snyder, visit Welcome to the Midside Podcast on iTunes or Google Play." So, big plug there. Hopefully, we get like a listener out of that. But seriously,
and by the way, if you Google Hail Snydra, we are. If you go to the image search, our T-shirt is the first image that comes up, and under the Google search, our T-shirt buying it is the second link.
Woot! Hail Snydra, indeed. So yeah, tell a friend, and till next time, folks. We love you. Bye.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Wisniewski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Day.
Pause the podcast. You're going to cut that out.
Fine. It's funny, though.
No, cut that part out.
That was funny, though, right? It was a funny joke.
It was funny. I laughed. And then you're going to cut it out in post.
Fine. I'm going to leave everything in.
Somehow
right now.
Somehow I knew it was a bad idea to message you with that. Like, I'm not even sure why I felt the need to bring that up.
Because it's funny. You telling me that is funny.
Right, but I just knew it would be a fucking bad idea.
You can't give me that material. You can't. This is going all at the end of the episode, actually. This is all at the end of the episode.
Fine. I'm just going to go immediately into the next story. I don't care if it's a hard cut.
No, hold on. I'll do it. Hold on. I'll give us a transition. So Daniel made me cut out a whole bunch of shit. So he's just going to go into the next story.
Wharton professor and forecasting expert.
No,
says
that doesn't
less
help
than...
us. That doesn't help our case at all, Justin. Now anyone who's wondering now has it confirmed.
I'm just going to go into the next story. It can be a hard cut. Can you put in just a sound effect that says, like, we've experienced technical difficulties? Okay.